106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the news, so, you know, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Hello, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Hartman. I'm Bird on the board. S&P futures down 39. NASDAQ futures down 153. That's after we had a big down day on Friday, even though we had an up week with the stuff going on over in Iran. As soon as we came home, or they came home, kind of went the other way. But we have Professor John Lee. Professor of what? I'm not exactly sure, but Professor John Lee?
We do indeed.
Was I promoted? I mean, my goodness gracious. What's my degree in? I mean, what am I teaching?
You're the, what was it, the, what do you used to call it? The School of Hard Knocks.
No, how to reconsider your life choices.
Yeah,
that's my course, PhD.
Yeah, you know, it's a, what would they, what's the new churches, the church of what's happening now? You know, you're kind of one of those kind of
what's
guys.
Happening now.
Yeah. S&P futures down. We have all kinds of stuff going on. Trump going to wipe Iran from the face of the earth again or something along those lines. But, man, whenever you get a chance to throw that thing from Johnson on here, it'd be kind of cool to listen to.
For sure, let you know.
There's a video of the Speaker of the House, who I absolutely, well, no good things to say, but the talking about trading. Now, one of the things today is that documents show that Trump made, I don't know how many zillion trades here.
I think the net wealth has gone up by a factor of 3 to 4.
Actually, some of his trades are pretty bad here on some of them, but He sold Palantir. Of course, he sold on the bottom, but then he bought it back, and then he. But the amount of trades that the guy made is absolutely incredible. The records show thousands of transactions. Now, the person we love to hate, and the person, no matter how bad this guy gets, she would have been worse. Kamala Harris actually had her money with an advisor, and she was just long ETFs like spiders and things like that. I don't have really an issue with any of that. I mean, there's nothing that says a person in Congress can't invest. We're talking hundreds of trades, thousands of transactions during the first quarter, totaling hundreds of millions.
Is this Kamala Harris?
This is Trump. This is
Donald Trump.
Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And the burst, of course, he made some. Palantir Technology has proven to be a great war fighting capabilities and equipment. Just ask our enemies. Well, this was. But here's a chart of all his trades. He bought. This is a Palantir stock. He bought on January 6th, and the stock was 180. Nice trade, Nathead. And then and immediately he sells it now at 140. And he sells some more at 135, sells some more at 135, sells some more at 130. Okay, but now he buys a bunch when it's starting to go back up at 145. So like a typical retail trader. And it goes up, it bounces around, then it goes flying down. In April, this is now in April of this year, it's trading under 130, so Trump promotes Palantir on True Social, and within about a week, it's back up to 155. And then he didn't sell any, and then, of course, went right back down again. So, I mean, he's trying his best to push his stock up, but boy, after the first trade at 180 when they bought a bunch, they bought 10 to 50,000, then 50,000 to 100,000. They claim it's unsolicited.
Chief, we have that clip if you want it.
Yeah, we'll put it.
The salary of Congress has been frozen since 2009. You know, when you adjust for inflation, a member of Congress today is making 31% less than they made in that year. It goes down every year. And over time, if you stay on this trajectory, you're going to have less qualified people who are willing to make the extreme sacrifice to run for Congress. I mean, it's just people just make a reasonable decision as a family on whether or not they can come and move to Washington, have a residence here, a residence at home, and do all the things that are required. So the counter-argument is, and I have some sympathy, look, at least let them, like, engage in some stock trading so that they can continue to, you know, take care of their family.
Jen, you know what that is? That's the failure, and there's an art form to this. It's a failure to ask the answer to the question. Did you ever take any PR training?
No.
I actually did for a day. I remember it, every minute of it. It was one of the most fascinating things I ever did. When I ran for the board, myself and a guy named Merrill Ferguson, nice guy, nobody had ever won a position on the CBOE board running against the slated candidates. So we ran against the slated candidates, I believe it was in 1992. And a bunch of people on the floor, what the hell was the name of the group? I don't remember the name, but it was a group that was all for open outcry, sort of auction market, those kinds of things. Everybody's seeing all the trades, you know, the stuff that most people maybe would like. So we ran with that. But the people who put up the money said, well, you guys aren't just going to act like a bunch of buffoons. Not that we would have, but hopefully we wouldn't have. If you ever get interviewed or something, so we're going to send you this training. So there was a lady there who had been she'd been a national reporter, really, night boy sharp, good Lord. And she'd left to essentially have a family. But she still did this consulting on the side. So thank God she picked on Merrill and not me. You remember that they played all these tapes, right? So one of the tapes was of Bob Newhart. In a Bob Newhart show, and he's getting grilled by this gorgeous lady who's on, you know, it's kind of like a 60 Minutes thing, about what he does, and he's a psychologist. She goes, now I'm just going to ask a few questions, blah, 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 no big deal. She jumps into him, and he was not prepared, absolutely not prepared. She's like, so how much do you charge per hour? You know, and he's like, well, like, you know, that time was like $50. $50. And how many times do people come before they're cured? Well, you never really, like, cure someone. So let me get this straight. You charge $50 an hour, and you've never cured anybody. He's like, well, we help. So they're not. You may help them, but they're not cured. What kind of doctor? She's on him, and he has no defense, right? Bob Newhart's, you know, he's a doctor. He's a brilliant guy. So then they show the buffoon, the pitcher from what's the movie with Kevin Costner, minor league player. Timothy Robbins.
Tim Robbins, Susan Sarandon. I think of it in a second, yeah.
I'll think of it. So here's the guy, the big dummy, right? So Kevin Costner, before he goes up to the big leagues, he says, I'm going to teach you your cliches. So he says, here's the, no matter what they ask you, you say these nine things, right? So the buffoon gets up there, and this beautiful girl, lady, is interviewing him. He goes, God, I love your hair like that. Did you change it? And then she starts asking these questions. Well, what do you think about coming to the major league? Whatever they ask me to do, I'm ready to do. Well, do you think you're a start? They want me to start, I'll start. They want me to relieve, I'll relieve. I'm just here to help the team. He was absolutely perfect. and he was a, you know, kind of a total dum-dum. Anyway, so she starts in on Merrill about so why you guys...
Was it? No, it wasn't for the love of the game. No, it was, keep going.
I'll think of it.
I'm looking it up.
She starts in on Merrill, and she says, well, so what, why are you running? Well, we want to keep the auction in the market. Are you saying there's no auction in the market now? Is it crooked? And Merrill's like, well, it's not exactly crooked, so then why are you running? If it's already that way, why do you need to run? And she just tied him in an absolute knot, and she would have to me as well. And then she gives you a whole list of things to do. And it basically comes down to there's kind of two... yin and the yang, two magnets coming together. One is, she says, you never say no to an interview. And on TV, radio, national TV. Because guess what? You can't pay for that advertising. It's too expensive. So you have to take it. However, you don't want to be an idiot. So,
Bull Durham.
Yeah, Bull Durham. So he, because it was the Durham Bulls, right? That's right. So she goes, if somebody calls you, you always say yes. You write down the things that you want to say. and say you'll call them back. When you call them back, you have to do stuff like if I was running for mayor, say, suppose I was still playing a lot of golf. So, oh, chief, how's your golf game? You got to turn it. You've got to give your message out in the 2 minutes they have there, in a way. So if they say, chief, how's your golf game? Oh, love to play golf. You all know that. But by the way, I can't remember have time for golf right now because I'm running for mayor and this is what I want to accomplish. You turn it around to where, but it can't be. You have to get your message out, but you also can't be a buffoon either. So this thing that we just played regarding Speaker Johnson, I'm sure that the message, the question had something to do with the insider trading that is going on all over the place out there. And he gave a perfectly cogent answer to how much people in the Senate and the House make and how it's falling behind. He doesn't care about the rest of the country, but he cares about those guys. That it's falling behind other people, which I don't doubt it is. But now that's not what he was asked. He wasn't talking about should Representative Schmo get to have an IRA and put his money in the spiders and hope the economy does well and the spiders grow. That's the question he asked. He answered, but that's not what he was asked, I'm sure. So it's an amazing deflection. So I asked a couple of my right-wingers this weekend, I go, what do you think of this? Oh, I said, he basically said it's okay for people insider trade. Oh, no, he never said that. You're right, he never said that. But he also didn't say it wasn't wrong, did he? He never even addressed the part.
I mean, this has been in our, I can remember, and I think it was in the 80s, I can remember they were doing a study of what they should be doing for congressional incentive, but especially congressional salaries. And now this goes way back, and it was a professor, and he was on a panel, and he said, well, I think that congressmen should make $250,000 a year.
It's time they're making 40, right? To have. How much were they making at the time? 40?
Yeah, the panel just goes berserk on the guy and goes, you are all making that and more. Why shouldn't a congressman? So this is what Singapore does. They pay their public service pretty good, very well. A senior public servant in Singapore will make $1 million a year. Of course, you also give up any right to privacy with your bank account because they can audit your bank account at any time. By the way, same with the policeman. They can audit your bank account as a policeman at any time either. That's why there's very little corruption there. But this has been an ongoing, and I don't have a, I know I'm rambling here, so just bear with me for a second.
Rambling is good.
I don't see a public outcry, Tom, against, the insider trading that we see. I follow Instagram where they are tracking government,
Nobody knows what.
Yeah.
How many people, other than listening to the show, know what insider trading even is?
I can't answer that question. How many people would know what it is? I think that most people would assume that it's trading on information that's not publicly available. It is what it is.
I would hope at least that. But you know what? With your friend in your people in Singapore, George Stigler. I remember his question. George Stigler was, I had him for two classes at the University of Chicago. He went on to be a Nobel Prize winner, not because he had me in class, but because he was like really good.
Now there's a connection.
There's no connection whatsoever. And he says, somebody asked him, say, how can you stop corruption in Chicago? He goes, I can stop it in a second. He goes, what do you mean? How do you do that? He goes, what does the chairman of General Motors make? It was like, 250 at the time. It wasn't like millions like now. And the mayor, Richard J. Daley, he was making, I'm going to say 25, 30, 35, something like that. He goes, his budget is bigger than General Motors. He hires as many people, and he makes one-tenth of what the guy makes. He says, give Mayor Daley $1 million a year. And every year he makes $1 million, you put $800,000 of it in escrow. And for the rest of his life, he gets a draw on that, a certain amount per year. If he's ever caught guilty of corruption, he forfeits all of it. You know, I can stop in a second.
Yeah. There you go.
I mean, he wanted to say, at the time, the aldermen in the city are, first of all, it's a part-time job. Illinois is really big on these part-time jobs. So you can actually be, you can be have a full attorney practice as an alderman. Okay, so the aldermen are making the time, I'm going to say 12 to 15. So Professor Stigler goes, can you think of anything dumber than to pay your aldermen only a small amount because you think they're stealing, and when you catch them stealing, you're pissed off? He goes, can anything be more stupid? Make it a full-time job, give it a real reasonable salary, and guess what? Eddie Verdoliak. I mean, he ended up going Fast Eddie. He ended up going to jail and whatever, but the guy made all his money with a law firm that did workman's comp cases and other cases against the city. What the hell? Are you kidding me? I mean, these guys are all, not all, but a lot of them are attorneys, and they have cases against the city.
Oh, yeah.
And so, honey, you couldn't write a book like this, fiction. Nobody would believe it.
Well, I've said this before on your show. I used to make fun of Malaysia, about the corruption in Malaysia. So Singapore, you know, is the traditionally has been the best street in a bad neighborhood, you know, as far as corruption, political corruption, although a lot of these countries are getting their act together over there. So Singapore's feeling some heat. They're getting competition, you know, from other countries here. But, you know, I used to make fun of all these other countries until I moved back to Chicago. And I'm just going, well, you got to be kidding me. Some of these things would never be allowed even in the... I have never heard in Asia of politicians being allowed to sue their own government that they're participating in.
Yeah, it's incredible. It's incredible.
It's just, it is. So, I mean, this goes in the same thing. I used to make fun of Russian oligarchs, Russia. This is all the oligarchs that had the power. Well, the last 3 to 5 years, we have seen, you know, I changed my opinion here too.
Well, you know, it's you have to ask yourself. I hope that even though I don't beat it like a drum, like maybe I should, but I actually have a real job. I mean, I manage money for people, and in that regard, I have God, how many series do I have? 7, 63, 65, 4, 3, 24. There's another one in there too, a 56, something like that, for municipal bonds. So I'm shall we say, a very registered, very regulated person. Now, and I'm up on these rules, and I'm also up on being honest, because I don't want to... Say our buddy Trump lobs me a bunch of dough. Says, here, manage it. I look at it, and I go, okay, the guy's the president. What can I do with this? Well, I can put it in index funds, right? Protected index program. I probably can protect it on a general manner by buying puts like I do everybody else. Because if it's a married put, it just means I have the stock and I have the put, I have a floor to it. As long as I go out 2-3 months or, you know, maybe 6 weeks at least on the puts on a regular basis, I'm not calling market turns, I'm not doing anything like that. And if I routinely sell calls, you know, 10% out of the money, you know, I don't think there's any problem with that. If as long as it's a routine, it's a program. And it's the same program I'm doing for other people. So there might be 8 names on the ticket, not just Trump. Okay, now, I think I could be very comfortable in any kind of regulation, in any kind of morality, doing that, which is more than most people would do. Most people don't have any idea how to use the option contract for protection or for whatever. But that's what I do. Okay, so, or if Trump had, you know, 9 zillion shares what am I looking at the screen? Say he had 9 zillion shares of Disney. Okay, I could go out a year and buy Disney puts, and I could sell near-term calls on a regular basis that I could prove that I'm doing this every week, every 2 weeks, whatever it is, and I can say I just do this every 2 weeks. And I think I could morally, legally, whatever, defend everything I did. Now, his guy was supposed to be independent. Now, if I all of a sudden, the first thing in my mind were if I were to say, if somebody were to lean over to me and say, hey, buy Palantir, I go, whoa, wait a minute. I'm not doing that. Because I don't know what he's going to say tomorrow about Palantir. I'm not doing that.
Is a simple solution just to stop individual stock trading?
No, I think the individual solution is have some friggin' morals.
Well, okay.
For me, I'm saying, I'm not, if he's cutting a deal with Intel, and I know he's doing it, I can't buy Intel. What the hell's the matter with me? I can't do that. So to say, oh, I did it on my own, and him or his one of his goofy kids didn't call me up and say buy it, or somebody else at the White House, who am I going to say that to that somebody's going to believe me? I want no part of that. So say there is third-party people doing this. What are they doing? Reading the news and figuring out this is what he's going to say next and buying ahead of it? Maybe he didn't make the call. I'm not saying he did, but somebody is reading the tape here, and you couldn't get me to do that. You could get me to buy the Qs, because that's a big index of all the NASDAQ stock. You know, obviously, if NVIDIA goes up, the Qs are going to buy it, but I'll do that on some sort of a basis, but you're not going to get me. We're talking thousands of trades, for God's sake. I do this for a living. I don't do 1,000 trades. I mean, I don't think anybody has any idea of what they're reading here, unless you're in the industry, maybe. You couldn't get me to do individual stock. How would I feel if I all of a sudden bought all the oil companies before the guy bombed Iran? I'd sit there and go, wait a minute. I shouldn't have done that. What am I doing here? I've long since tried to impose my morality on other people, because most of them don't have any. Not most, but some, and they don't. Then you have the guy at Congress. Well, you know, these guys aren't making enough. They ought to be able. That's not what they asked you, you buffoon. They asked you, what about insider trading? It's not about should you have a 401k. We know you should, for God's sake. But it's very good to always answer the other question, right, Jen? Because the answer sounds fine. Yeah. The answer sounds fine. And people are, and you're educated in that. That's what you do. And you never answer the question that's asked, right? That's the beauty of a press conference. Oh, man, but this is even more important.
So what is the solution? I mean, as much as, you know, I actually think we do have some honest politicians. I know I'm in the minority.
Yeah, they're the poor ones. They're the ones that leave.
Yeah, they're the ones my niece, who you know pretty very well, used to work for one of the aldermen, and she said she was the hardest working woman she's ever seen, and she was honest as the day is long. So,
and she's an alderman.
What's the solution?
And she's an alderman. If she went to run for representative, she'd probably get her ass kicked. And if she got in after two or three terms, she wasn't taking any money, she wouldn't get a decent committee assignment, and she'd quit.
What's the solution?
I think part of it is in the money. You got to pay somebody some more dough, and you have to have a moral code that you don't just get to. What is the code now? It used to be they didn't trade. Now they do whatever they want. It's a total moral relative. But it's not just them. It's society. I mean, I hate to be one of these idiots that blame education, blame society. The fact is, nobody thinks they're encumbered by any rule. And why should they? Watching the people that are in office or people that are in business. Why should they? Nobody else has it. And why am I so honest? It's only cost me my whole life. I mean, what did your buddy Todd say? Hey, here's the chief. If he wasn't so honest, he'd be a billionaire. Well, that's an interesting comment about somebody.
Right? That was said as a compliment too.
Yeah, I'm saying, but is it really? I don't know.
Well, it is, but I mean, it's not. I mean, it's a sad state of our affairs here.
Yeah,
but I mean, but you know, it. Like I said, what's the solution?
By the way, that's the reason. Well, one of the reasons, of course, I talk bad about the guy. That's the reason why I'll never get Trump's account, right? Duh.
Yeah.
If you want the account, if you want the account, you got to bend a little or more or a lot.
There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, I mean, if one of his kids calls up and says, buy Palantir, and I go, I can't do that, how long do you think I keep the account?
Well, but let me just keep asking the questions.
By the way, the term unsolicited.
What do we do here? I mean, what are the steps we? I mean, stop individual stock trading. And you can have, certainly invest in funds and so forth, but individual stock trading or, because, you know, they have disclosure rules.
He disclosed. Now what?
Yeah, that doesn't bother them at all.
No.
I mean, there's no embarrassment out there.
No, there used to be. You'd never get Harry Truman to put this out there.
Let me ask this. Would you support a $100,000 a year raise for congressmen
easily
with a restriction on stock trading?
I think it'd be more. It should be more than 100,000.
That's not my question. God, you sound like Mike Johnson there for a second.
No, but I'm saying
answer the question.
Well, the reason why I said that is because Stigler thought that the mayor should make $1 million in 1975. So what? Why does a president make 400 grand? Everybody in the room makes millions of dollars when he has a meeting with these guys. He shouldn't be the lowest paid person on Air Force One going to China, and he is.
Right? Okay. So part of the solution then is let's raise their salaries to a competitive level. And then the second one is what restrictions do we put?
Well, it's not so much the restrictions, Jan. It's what happens if you don't. What happens if you ignore it? The answer is something should happen. Now nothing happens.
Yeah, but I'm trying to get real world. I mean, but what should happen then?
So I guess we're going on different numbers of the chessboard. You're trying to find the law or the procedure,
and I'm trying to find the solution.
Well, I'm trying to say whatever the rule is, if you don't enforce the rule, it doesn't matter. What I'm saying. And right now, there's no enforcement of the rule.
What is the rule?
Well, I think the rule is you're not supposed to be doing this. You're supposed to have your stuff in a blind trust. I'm not sure it's a rule or a convention, Jen. Actually, I don't know the answer to that.
I think it's a convention.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a rule. That's my point is. Because if it was a rule, then somebody would have gone after their opponents about this.
Well, I'll give you day one. Back when I first started digging into this, when I was on the board of the SIBO, I had a friend who knew all this stuff. And Carl knows all this stuff because he did. If you're a rookie coming in, I think there are rules. You know, I'll ask Carl about it tomorrow. But in those days, you had to put your money in a blind trust. Blind trust, which is not what this is. It doesn't appear. And those jobs were crummy jobs. The guy was a representative, made 40 grand a year. This is 1980-something. And he had two houses. And everybody he went to law school with at the end of 3 years was doing better than him. They were members of the country club. He wasn't, if you were honest. So we have to get rid of that. But the guy who, and I think it was, like I say, I don't know what this even means. It was, they thought it was, quote, a rule. Maybe it was a congressional convention or something. I don't know. But all of a sudden, one day, Dick Cheney goes, hey, screw you guys, I'm trading. He didn't get impeached. He didn't get thrown out. He didn't get sanctioned. He just did it. And as more these guys push, the more it appears there's no... The Supreme Court says something, Trump ignores it. He didn't care. Supreme Court has no enforcement power. He's the enforcement power.
Oh, I just Google it. And no, federal representatives and senators are not currently required to put their personal money or assets into a blind trust.
Right.
Okay, I mean,
but there was
no
a time when it says currently. What is the history of that? I think at one point they were. Yeah, we should get somebody on to talk about it. But the point is, the question is, if the laws are, I mean, when you go back to the history, I mean, I really believe all this stuff comes from where it all comes from, which is a dumb statement. But when people start living together and doing stuff together, there's always been some people who want to do things differently. So there needs to be some sort of rules to live by. And whenever you have a rule, there has to be some sort of consequence if the rule is not followed. And now we're at the point where if you follow the rules, you're an idiot. I mean, you really are an idiot. I mean, if I'm in line for a left-hand turn and I don't go around and make the second turn, I'm the moron. Because nobody will ever get caught. Nobody even honks at the guy. That's just okay. We've turned it. It's not just in the White House. It's everywhere you see. I mean, unfortunately, the only bad thing about being the dude in stocks and jacks is you almost become like a reporter. We're always looking around, seeing what's going on, if it makes any connection to what we're doing on the show. You see people doing this, you see people doing that, and you go, what are they thinking? I mean, Jefferson said if people forget religion and forget morals, this Constitution isn't worth spit, basically. And he's right.
Well, yeah, there's no doubt.
Yeah.
And, but I mean, look, we did not invent corruption when it comes to this Congress, right? As bad as it is. So they've always had it. I mean, let's go back at my favorite president, Ulysses Grant, believe it or not.
Oh, Kevin is in. Name me one Supreme Court thing that Trump has ignored. You know, the people, why do people feel they have to defend this dude? I have no idea. I have no idea.
Well, I don't either. I mean, it is, and believe me, I think I made a mention earlier, listening to two sister-in-laws discuss politics in the back seat 3 weeks ago. I still have post-traumatic stress syndrome on that one. But, you know, I think, you know, I blame us. We're the ones that have not been jumping up and down about the, you know, passing, you know, the legislation, the Trusting Congress Act, you know, banning people from trading individual stocks, requiring them to divest or put certain assets in blind trust. Imagine, read that on the internet verbatim. That's why it sounded like it did. I'm not normally that articulate. But I mean, you know, blame, you know, shame on us for not requiring this.
But who's us? What,
me. I mean,
but what,
you know,
what is that? What is that?
We talk about it, but I mean, what have we?
What are we supposed to do? There's supposed to be a ballot box, and all of a sudden we get two people running for office like last time. What's the point of even going? They're both at opposite ends of the spectrum, but both are totally incompetent. But both ends. I mean, where is the process? Why do we not have anybody? It appears that we actually look forward to seeing them be president. When's the last time you voted for anybody?
Well, I did.
I'm not talking about cast a ballot where you actually said, "I really want this person in there." When's the last time you did that?
I voted for Obama. I voted for Biden.
Why?
Yeah. Why? Because I did not want Trump.
Okay,
back
well, that's not what I asked. So, did you really want Biden in there? No.
Yeah.
Why?
I did. Because I thought he was a good moderate Democrat at that time. He was an experienced politician. He knew how to get shit done in the Hill. Okay. Of course, what we didn't realize is that, you know, he was aging quickly.
I was never impressed by him even on his best day, ever.
Okay, well, fair enough. But you asked me the question. I'm answering the question.
Well, what I asked was, is there somebody that if you would have had anybody in the country you'd have wanted there, would you ever seen? Has that guy ever been on the ballot?
Well, no. I've never seen the perfect candidate. Okay, I've never seen the candidate that, you know, that aligned. Well, let me think. I think John McCain, I thought was a perfect candidate. I thought he was very good, but I didn't vote for him at the time. I don't want to go down this path of being overly cynical here about it, but I mean, we do have some culpability as citizens.
Yeah, but what does that mean? We don't want anybody to get a gun. We don't want to get anybody to get a guillotine. But right now, what are we left with? We're not going to pick the next president. We're not going to pick the person. The plutocracy is here. No Abraham Lincoln with a beard and big ears from Illinois is going to run again and win. It's not going to happen.
Well, disagree. I don't disagree to a certain extent, but then again, I refuse to go down the path of saying there's no hope.
Well,
there's no way to reform the system.
Do we have Mr. Flanagan?
We do indeed.
You do. Good morning, all.
General reform the system. Look what happened to Elliot Spitzer. I think that guy was probably the smartest guy that could have run for something in the last 40 years. He wasn't perfect, and they tapped his phone until they found out something bad he did.
What did he do?
He had a hooker who came across state lines. But they monitored his bank account, and they tapped his phone lines without any hint of a crime when they did it. Am I right, John? John Fanning?
The real reason they wanted him out was because he could see the 2008... you know, banking crisis coming down the pike with the fake loans and, you know, mortgages to unqualified borrowers, and he wrote an op-ed piece about it, and, you know, that's what got him axed.
What was he running for?
He was governor of New York.
Governor.
He wasn't running for anything.
Okay, because that was in the 80s, right?
Later than
2007?
No,
it was much earlier than that. Okay.
Because Well, now that we have our attorney.
He had been a U.S. attorney, hadn't he?
He was the U.S. attorney for Southern New York. And he can, this is how weird people are. When I say weird, people are people. But when I was first came to the exchange, there was no OEX. There was no S&P, really, 500. The first index product was the Kansas City Value Line, which was, God, what a piece of crap that thing was. But that was the first index. And so then the S&P came afterward, and then the first really traded stock was the OEX, was the options 100. Before you had any of that, you just traded essentially regular stocks, and they were keyed off the bonds. The bonds started trading, 81, 82, somewhere when I first started, the bond futures. Maybe it might have been before that. But the individual stocks, what people didn't know, is almost like over 50% of the stock at one point that traded on the New York Stock Exchange came from the options exchanges. So because somebody would come in and buy 100 calls, say, and they're 50 delta, and you sit there, okay, you know, I'm 5,000 delta short. The first thing the person would do is go to New York and buy 5,000 shares of stock. So you're neutral. And so and then when somebody came in to sell you those calls, you'd buy them back and you'd sell the stock. So the stock was going back and forth. And there were specialists in New York that obeyed the rules, and there were some that didn't. The New York Stock Exchange was way more powerful than the SEC. Go figure, right? And so these guys basically never got spanked. And, you know, there was somebody who was honest, and there was the next guy who was, all of a sudden the market's a quarter, three-eighths, 10,000 shares offered, you go to buy 5,000, trades ahead, and you pay a half. And you sit there and go, wait a minute. The guy saw my order, he bought the crap in front of me and sold it to me an eighth higher. Well, duh, even I can make money that way, right? I mean, this is not, you know, it's the law of the jungle. Some people, well, Elliott Spitzer started to break some of that up. The rules that the New York Stock Exchange was not enforcing, or the SEC, which is supposed to be above the New York Stock Exchange, but didn't do anything about it. He started enforcing some of the stuff, and he went after a couple of the specialist firms. And all of a sudden, everybody in the industry hated the guy. And the odd part is, I'd be sitting up, you know, after working out, we'd be in the bar up at the Buckingham, and they hated the fact that this guy now came after people in our industry. Even though the same people would sit there and tell me how their specialist is a crook, when he went after a specialist, what's he doing in here? It's our industry. He's got no business in here. I mean, the human psyche is a very interesting thing, isn't it, Mr. Flanagan? And so, so one day, I'm in there and the guy gets indicted. And they go, great.
Which guy gets indicted?
Elliott Spitzer.
Spitzer.
Okay. One day he gets indicted, and there's five guys sitting at the bar, and they go, yeah, great, we didn't like that guy. Look what he did to our industry. So what do you mean? All he did was go after the people who were cheating. Oh, yeah, but he had no business in here. Come, we don't need the outsiders. We got the SEC. We got regulation. Yeah, right. So then I said to these guys were all pretty successful. I said, now, how did they get him? What do you mean? I said, well, they tapped his phone. Well, so what? Look what he did. I go, all right, wait a minute. The guy's got money, all right? And he started taking out $9,000 for this and $7,000 for that. And the excuse they used was that they thought he was being blackmailed. So they tapped his phone to protect him. Talk a lot about a line of BS. So
yeah.
I said to these guys, yeah. hey, you guys are big swinging dicks, right? And they go, oh, yeah. Now, you could, I know you like to go to Vegas. Now, when you go to Vegas, You're not playing at the $5 table. I mean, you're going to take $8,000, $9,000, $10,000 cash with you, aren't you? Well, yeah. So now, say your wife wants to paint the house. You got a pretty big place, right? You're in Norfolk. You're in wherever. Yeah. Well, it's going to be $15,000, right? What if the guy wants to get paid cash? Well, they take out the cash. Okay. So there's two. I mean, what if you go out and buy a car and you pay $15,000 and the guy wants cash? Well, yeah. All right. So now you've had three.
Well, I'll tell you what, he's spending a lot of money on these girls, too.
Well, yeah.
I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah, but I'm saying, but I'm not talking about whether he did was right. We know it's not right. But I said, now you guys, should I be able to put a phone tap on your house? Well, no, why would you? Because you had three transactions. Well, I thought you were being blackmailed. Why would you think that? Well, why would they think he was being blackmailed? They said, well, you can't do that. I said, they did to him? If I tapped your phone, And if I was looking for any kind of marital thing, how many among us are perfect that everybody could listen to every phone call you make and not come up with something? Well, yeah, now that you mention it, okay. But it's scary how people think. They don't want stuff enforced because they think it might be enforced against them. How many people do you know complain about people doing stuff in traffic and then one day they get pulled over, the cop's an asshole, right?
Oh yeah, I know that. Here, I'm going down the rat hole of.
Yeah,
his prostitution scandal. He was spending a lot of money.
Yeah.
This is what? This is 2000 and he was.
Well, they got him. They got him for not him for hiring a hooker. They got him for bringing somebody across state lines, right, Jen?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, everybody knows. Everybody knows.
2006 or 2007.
Yeah. But everybody knows the hookers in New York are no good. The ones in New Jersey are much better.
I was thinking, listen to both John and Tom. And I was amused watching the clip of Johnson speaking yesterday because he was thinking about the compensation package that people get and what they're expected to do with it. So they have to have two homes. They have their families shuttling back and forth. They got all these things. So why can't they make a little more money? That was kind of the way I saw it boiling down. But the thing I really have trouble reconciling is what kind of a compensation package can you come up with for any senator, let's say, just pick the Senate versus the House, but even the House too. What kind of compensation package is going to pay for your lifestyle, which really your lifestyle at that point has almost nothing to do with what your performance at your job is, because most of your energy and time seems to be spent in getting reelected in the next election cycle, which is tremendously expensive and causes people to compromise themselves and get hooked up with shady people and get beholden to lobbyists. You name it, the whole system gets contaminated. But I don't care if you pay these people $4 million a year or $40 million a year. Would it really, relate to what they have to use their time to do? I don't think it would improve their allegiance to their job, because their job really now isn't about legislating. It's about
A senator is supposed to be 6 years. I mean, John, Mr. Lee asked me the solution, and I was stumbling because I don't know the solution. I mean, I do know that we took about 3 weeks to a month designing compensation packages when I was in grad school, and I don't know of anything I thought was tougher to do than that. To try and motivate people to do exactly what you want them to do, short-term, long-term, mid-term, in such a way, using money to where you drive them there. I think it's possible, and you can certainly do better. But I also don't want my president, even Trump, sitting in a room with eight oil executives and they're making $40 million and he's making $400,000. I think that's wrong. I don't know if $40 million is a number, but I think that's kind of absurd as well. I mean, I don't know how you get there from here, but you know what I'm saying? I mean, there's a gap here. You can't have a rep that is, runs for the legislature at age 32 or 33 or 28 or whatever you got to do to be a representative, and being in office 10 years, and he can't play golf unless, not that everybody should belong to a country club, but he can't play golf
unless a donor or a friend invites you in.
So somewhere that gap has to be closed. Now, does that mean a first time rep makes $20 million a year? I don't know about that.
But no one's saying that. I mean, John, I don't know if you heard what I was saying earlier, but I can remember to this day, it was in the 80s, and there was a conversation, there was a panel, and some guys, I think they were appointed by Congress, it was a professor, said we should be paying the representatives $250,000 a year. And the panel went, oh my God, are you kidding me? This is, they're corrupt, or, all the stuff. Sounds like the chief in a way. But he goes, he looked at all the panel members, goes, you're all making $250,000 a year.
Yep.
Or maybe it was 100. And so, I mean, we have been going over this. So there is a little, and I just want to go a little bit off tact.
Well, Jan, what is the lobbyists make versus the center?
We want to make the money, but we don't want anyone else to make the money. Okay, so there is that one going on, too. Sorry.
What does the lobbyist make sitting across in the center? 10 times as much?
Yeah.
I mean, you got to close that gap somehow. I don't know how you do it, but go local. Chicago has 50 aldermen. I'll lob out a solution there. Cut it to 35 or 40. We got way too many aldermen. Cut it to 35 or 40. Right now, what's the deal, Jan? You don't make much. You make, what, 100 grand? Of course, it's a part-time job, right? So you can steal other places. It's a part-time job, but then what do they give you to run your office? You get enough for like three or four people, the office, and another 100 grand for a limo or something. So they wiggle around the salary by giving you all this extra money for all your expenses and stuff. So, but even so, I would make an alderman 35 people. You could talk me to 40. You could talk me to 30. I'm no genius. I don't know the number. make it a full-time job, which nobody will want it then, and pay somebody a reasonable amount. I mean, whatever that is, $200 a year, $250.
I bet you we will not have a problem getting Candace to run if it's a full-time job, and you gave so people don't have to go into, you know, don't have to go into debt to, you know, to take these positions.
Well, Illinois is the apostle of part-time jobs. We're a representative and a senator of the U.S. They're considered full-time jobs. Who was the guy who just got bounced out of the assessor's office, the head of the assessor, John? What the hell is his name?
The one who's voted down, Cakey? It's Cakey?
No, the guy before him. He was there forever.
Oh, Berrios. Berrios.
Berrios. You know what his job was? He was a lobbyist down in the legislature. The being assessor was a part-time job.
And his entire family.
Is this a state assessor, the city assessor, the county assessor?
The county assessor?
His entire family was on the county's payroll, too.
Yeah.
It was a pretty expensive job, really.
Don't be so cynical. Yeah.
One of my buddies took me to, he's trying to get his marijuana license, right? So we go to this shindig I've mentioned this before a few times, so hopefully I'm not boring anybody. The guy was, not Durbin, but State Senator Durkin. Remember that name, John? He was the head Republican and the state senator, right? Right.
Yeah.
And so we go to this.
Jim Durkin, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was in Hinsdale or something. Some really upper schmo bar and restaurant, right? I'm sitting there. I don't know if I belong in this place. So I'm sitting at the bar, and of course, that's where I always hold court, right? So that morning, I was just ranting and raving about Commonwealth Edison and getting yet another raise and how if you fight them, the attorneys and stuff they use to fight you back now becomes an expense. So they can say this is how much our expenses went up, and they actually get paid on that, right? So it's such a screw-up. It's, you know, you can't write fiction like that. So I'm sitting there talking about how these lobbyists must make like a lot of dough. And it's, shall we say, very easy on the eyes. Lady comes up, and she leans. There's an open spot next to me. She's trying to get a glass of wine. So I of course, start BSing with her. And she says, I said, by the way, what do you do for a living? And I just had a sip of wine, and she goes, I'm a lobbyist for Commonwealth Edison. Her outfit, well, except for John Lee, who's like, he's like a clothes horse. Mr. Flanagan, you and I, her outfit costs more than our entire wardrobe. And I mean, she looked the part. So she says to me, I'm from Commonwealth Edison, you know, blah, blah, blah. We're working on this rate increase. And I'm going,
by the way, when the chief says that, all that means is that I actually ironed my clothes.
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to go on record there.
Oh, God. He goes to Milan every year, you know, to get the right
stuff. Oh, yeah, right.
So then she says to me, of course, this thing was like $200 or $300 just for a few cocktails. And, of course, there's one guy in the place that's not all white. And I end up talking to him, and these guys open up a pizza distributorship, and he wants a zoning variance, and they don't want to give it to him. Anyway, so she says to me, aren't you coming to the dinner? Well, the dinner is another $500. And my buddy is not about to pay for that. And I said, well, you know, we would really like to, but we have three of these things we go to every night. What a load of crap that was. but was I quick with that? You guys had to be proud of me. She goes, I understand. You understand. I don't. Anyway, I thought I was pretty quick for me. I was pretty quick. But anyway, the guy comes by, Durkin, and he goes to meet everybody in the place. Those guys are good at that. He gives me his card. What do you think it says on the card? State Senate? No. He's a law firm.
Just yeah. Saying.
If you ever need me here. Not if you ever have a comment about what I'm doing in down at the state. No, you care about that. Here's my law firm.
Well, that's how you keep your fundraising chugging along, too.
Oh, yeah. Hey, can I shift gears for a second on you guys?
Please.
What about the basketball? NBA, the seventh game last night was on Prime. Now, two things. One is I went to see if it was on regular TV, and it wasn't, and they got all these comments on there. And one guy goes, if you tell me I have to give money to Jeff Bezos to watch a basketball game, it's the last basketball game I'll ever watch. I mean, what do you think about this vertically integrating this thing? You guys are not into sports as much as I am, but from a marketing standpoint, even a guy like me who likes to watch basketball, I used to play three nights a week, so I always loved the game. If I could go out shoot a few tomorrow, I would. What do they think of? I always like to turn it around and say, what does Walmart think of me? What does the president or the mayor or whoever it is think of me when they make that stupid statement? I mean, how how dumb do they think I am? And I sort of get insulted. Well, I turn around now. Do these guys expect me to be more charged up for next week's game because I couldn't watch this week's game? I haven't been able to watch any of these games. I could care less about the NBA right now. I'm not going to watch the finals. Why would I? Unless there's nothing else on, I might throw it out for me. Do they think that they have such a... Two questions. One is about the money. Secondly, do they think that I have such a desire? I mean, I can't go to sleep without watching this, that I'll do whatever I have to do. And oh, by the way, if I don't get to see five games, I'm just as anxious to watch the next. What is their read of, I'll say, my psychology or anybody else's? I couldn't watch that game last night. Does that make me not want to watch anymore, or does that make me watch the next one even more? I'm going to say it doesn't want me to watch. I don't care if I watch anymore. Now, what do they think of me is my question.
I didn't even know there were the finals. Let's put it that way.
Well, they're not. They're going to the conference finals next week.
Yeah.
But I'm saying, what?
Well, I don't think you figure in their calculations at all, Tom, because they've got enough people who will be happy to drop whatever money to attend a game or to subscribe to a cable, you know, or TV, streaming, whatever. And so they don't need you. And I think this is what's, you know, kind of apparent to me. And I don't need them is the way I turn it around. Because clearly it's not about satisfying my needs. It's not affordable. I can't make a habit of going to these games. I used to when I was in high school and college. But, you know, that's long gone. I can't go back to those days. But I've just been dropped off the radar for them. I don't exist, and they're perfectly happy not having me to think about.
But are they?
Oh, yeah. I'm sure they are.
I'm sure they'd be happier if I joined Prime and watched it.
But, you know, I mean, you get other benefits for joining Prime. You can watch other stuff, too, and get free shipping and all that other stuff. So is it a lot of money per game to subscribe to Prime? Probably not. But that doesn't make me want to do it any more, you know, eagerly.
Well, I mean, I guess you look at it from a business standpoint, and I'm trying to wander this, maybe lead this maybe into an antitrust question, not a discussion. But I have to believe that last night's game, Game 7, and I'm not even sure it was on Detroit or Cleveland. It might have been. But I'm gonna say that less people watched it nationwide than normally would have. Okay, and you can say if you're a dummy, you'd say, well, Amazon outbid whoever else did. Well, they did, obviously. So now less people are watching it. I think we all would agree on that than if it was on free TV, which means the commercials and the Prime thing have to be less than the other one. I mean, why would PTI pay as much for 2 million people as it would for 10. I don't think it's that much difference, but whatever it is, we wouldn't. I hope we wouldn't. We made it dumb. So the question is, because they want us to do something else. Now, does that mean in order for us to get a bottle of wine in town, we have to buy a pizza from John Lee's Pizza because he owns a wine company? Well, I don't think that's legal. There's this vertical integration on this. Why should I have to join Prime to watch a basketball game? Now, if that's called what? Vertical integration, right? Or what's the term in the Clayton Act, John? It's a tied trade or something. Is that what they call it?
Well, yeah. Why is it vertical integration? If they would have gone to Disney.
Well, I'm asking, it's more of a tied relationship.
Sorry, I apologize to your listeners. I'm not following you at all.
But it's more of a tied relationship. Why do I have to buy this to get that? I already paid for cable. I already paid for whatever, and people are paying for commercials. I'm asking a question. I don't know. But
it's a market. It's not like you're entitled by right to watch the game. So everything's got a price. And really, Tom, I think, you know, when you put gambling into the picture. Any gambler who's got money riding on a game is going to be paying whatever it takes to watch that game, and be placing bets during it and everything else. So this is a whole different clientele that they're really interested in serving. It isn't about the people who love the sport, period. No, it's about everything else associated with it. And at that point, they can kind of pick and choose who their clients are.
I know I'm splitting hairs, John, but if they were to say, we want to, like, say it was a professional fight. We want to offer this on cable. In order to watch Game 7, you got to pay $20. I honestly have no problem with that. I have a problem with it, but I think that's sort of their right. But for a third party to say, you got to buy a car from me in order to buy tires or something, there's something in the antitrust laws that smells there, I think. It's a third-party relationship, which I think is a little weird. I don't mean, I'm asking, you're the attorney.
Well, I can't parse it out legally, you know, where it crosses a line. I think it's, you know, it's probably, you know, unethical, and it's, you know, it takes this, you know, this money out of people's pockets who really, you know, should have better choices, I think, if you really.
Well, because I mean, if I'll give an example, I actually have some place I'm going here, which maybe is not obvious to do. It's not obvious to me. People at any level, and I think our listeners are at a pretty higher level, and I think hope we are. When I say higher,
recording stopped.
Whatever.
We're going to start getting. Yeah. Now we're going to get. You know, now it's going to be interesting here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if there are rules about tying things together, and at some level, you know, how do you tie something together? I mean, if you were to have and you're not supposed to have lost leaders, right, Mr. Flanagan? In other words, there was a place on 95th Street, South Side. If you bought a pizza, they sold you a bottle of wine for $5. Well, the wine cost the guy $7. So the first thing that happened was the people who sold wine down the block called Oak Lawn or wherever we park where it was, said, that's illegal. You can't do that. You can't run losses like that. You know, if the three of us decided to buy two airplanes and fly back and forth to L.A. from Chicago, United can't drop, well, they're not supposed to, but they do. They shouldn't be able to drop that particular line. Like, if we figure we can do it for $300 a seat, United should not be able to singularly pick that route and say, we'll do it for $50 a seat and put these three idiots out of business. Now, they do, but I know it's against the law. It's against the Clayton Act. So, but on some level, people are going to say, well, okay, they shouldn't be able to take a $2 loss on the wine to get you, because that hurts the wine guy, right? Because it does. Well, now, everybody, I think, can understand it at that level, but when I up it to, okay, this guy is going to make you buy Prime just to watch a basketball game, it's the same thing, right? Because obviously he's paying, if everybody else is willing to pay $1 million for this game, given the commercial rates of a million people watching it, but he's willing to pay $1.5 million for less people, he's taking a loss on the game itself, just like the guy in the pizza place, right? A little more difficult to understand, but it's the same thing, right?
Yeah, well, what's Bezos' involvement with the NBA or any other, you know, media mogul and their relationship to the stuff that they feature on their platforms? If he's an investor in the NBA?
No, I don't think he is. I don't think he is. I mean, I'm saying, but he's running.
What if he is? What if he is?
But he's running a law. First of all, he can't invest in the NBA. You got to have a team. He doesn't.
No,
have a team.
I mean, but yeah, if he's got, you know, some angle where he's you know, well, part of some.
He,
you know,
I don't think he doesn't own part of a team, does he?
I don't think he does. What if he did? That's what I'm saying.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's a different business. But I'm saying, can you run a loss leader to push another product? And the answer appears at the pizza level, the answer is no. But if it's at a big enough level where none of us can understand it, evidently the answer is yes. Right?
Yeah.
Well, now, hence the guy says, if I have to play Jeff Bezos, I'm not watching the game. Just saying. All right, guys, what about the interest rates last week? Even though the market was up all week, the last few days, the 10-year blew through 5%, like dinner through a goose. It's 5.13%. 10 years, 4.59. Mortgage rates are up. Audrey was telling me yesterday that housing prices are up. Mortgage rates are up. Where's the cliff here, guys, or is there one?
I don't think. Everything seems to be thrown out the window, Tom. Every standard economic measure, you know, we're in a war. And that's a different subject, I know. It doesn't look like anyone's going to back down anytime soon, either the Iranians or the United States. So, and I think that, you know, I do think that Trump kind of regrets starting this war or following Netanyahu into it. So, I mean, so the standard economic theory seems to be thrown out the window.
Sure or does.
Am I being...
Well, temporarily, at least.
Yeah. You know, and people have been worrying about this, but, you know, it's still, you know, the markets are going up like there's no tomorrow.
Well, it's been narrow, but yes, they have. It's been very narrow. Micron's back up another $15 today. So it's been narrow, and people are chasing, people are investing in. It's a very narrow group. It's, you know, it's been the seven plus a few. We've seen that before. You know, that's a problem. We're seeing margin interest creep up, margin loans, and we're seeing, you know, we're going to get a money supply reading here at some point, but the question is when. I mean, we're pushing money into the system. Japan is now having to worry about selling some of our treasuries. I mean, we're acting like, you know, the weakness is in somebody else. I mean, we just went to China, and both sides have to be somewhat aware of how broke they both are. Yet they're talking like they're not. I sort of don't get that. I mean, Mr. Flanagan, what's your opinion on all that? I mean, our biggest issue is ourselves. It's not somebody else.
Of course, I'm interjecting here, but I think that if you read all the political pundits here, you know, the Chinese don't see a fundamental weakness in the United States. They just see our own. We are the weakness. It's ourselves. Okay, sorry, John. You were the one that was asked the question.
No, I think that China, you know, Xi Jinping personally is under assault, you know, on the inside. You know, all the military purges in the last year, the people have just vanished from the scene. Their whereabouts are unknown. People are out of favor, or people were plotting. His, you know, position is about as uncertain, I think, as it's ever been, and that's saying something, you know, in any of these totalitarian countries' histories. So I think it was really important to them to have Trump and all the other people he could muscle, and, you know, into the, you know, room when they were there, and, you know, it gave him credit and standing at home with the people around him where he feels vulnerable, and that's probably, I guess, you know, at some level you think, well, maybe that's good for us too if we know who we're dealing with, if we don't want to pull the plug and watch everything go down the drain in China and have chaos politically and militarily. So I think they had a lot to gain from having this meeting. I mean, it was postponed from March originally, but I think China was very, you know, intent on making sure it happened and to roll out the carpet as visibly and, you know, as elegantly as they could. And that's to save his behind, not anybody else's. So,
well, you have the three superpowers. All to me are so much weaker than they were 10 years ago. It's scary. What does the rest of the world think? I mean, we clearly are. We're broke. We've given away half our weapons, and we've blown off half ourselves. I mean, China, they got nothing but debt. Look at Russia. This guy's losing every day in Ukraine, it seems. I mean, all they're doing is now they're borrowing other people to kill over there from North Korea and stuff. I mean, could you imagine the three superpowers in this kind of shape? I mean, it makes me nervous.
Now look at, you know, Ukraine, which suspends elections, and, you know, money laundering. I mean, these are the participants on the world stage. It's like, if this is what's front and center, what's going on behind this?
Well, yeah, if this is what we can see, what are we seeing? Of course, who knows what you're listening to, but they claim Putin is now every night in he's in secure places every night because he's worried. Why shouldn't he be? I think the guys who work for him, all these guys are getting their yachts.
Look at Trump too. All these people are vulnerable.
Yeah,
and they're being marked, you know, by forces opposed to them. So,
well, plus
they've all got a lot at stake.
Plus they've all decided that knocking off somebody else's leadership is good. Boy, oh boy, if I'm a leader, I'm not so sure I want to lob that one around. I mean, you know, the idea that if we don't like a regime. The only one who isn't shooting anybody is China, which is scary to say.
You can't disagree with that comment. They are the only ones that are not shooting anybody right now.
I mean, but I don't see how you walk into the meeting.
Although, I mean, they did give the nod to the Russian invasion of Ukraine. So, yeah, they're not actively shooting, but they have certainly had
Right.
Tip their finger, you know, put their fingers on the scale.
I'm sure it's good for business. It's got to be good for drone business and everything. I mean, a neutral party in a war, boy, oh boy, can you, economically, can there be a better spot when you can sell stuff to both sides? That's what they're doing, right?
Oh, that's, they're not neutral.
Well, but I'm saying we're buying stuff from them that we're using in the war, and so is Russia over in Ukraine, and they're probably selling to Iran, too.
And how many people are buying from us?
I don't know. The Iranians aren't, but I don't see, and you look at the winners and you look at the losers. Well, the biggest losers are our allies, UK, Japan, and by the way, us.
Well, you know, I think we succeeded, you know, for better or worse, in boxing in China before, you know, the meeting took place, because, you know, the Straits of Hormuz and, you know, the outflow of oil and all that was, of course, great importance to China. But I think of even greater importance was the Straits of Malacca. And you'd know more about this than I, John, that, you know, that's the choke point when stuff gets, you know, close to delivery. And the U.S. has, you know, muscled its way in with Indonesia and Malaysia to allow, you know, U.S. military to patrol that area. So we've got, you know...
Yeah, we've been there for a long time. Half the kids that when my kids were at the Singapore American School, half of them were, 25% were military families. So we're, we've been there for a long time. The Straits of Malacca have been, you know, I'm expecting that to be a flashpoint one of these days, you know, but as an aside, I would say every 2 years there's a plan to build a large Panama-type canal through either Malaysia or somewhere to get around the Straits of Malacca. But yeah, no, we're involved. We're for as much as Singapore says they're neutral, they have one of the biggest American naval bases that
right.
that there are. I mean, aside from Pearl Harbor, maybe.
Where was Subic Bay?
Philippines.
Philippines. So that's totally, we don't have anything there anymore?
No. We gave that up after Mount Pinatubo, and also they are asking too much money. But, you know, I made this comment once before, Sean, I'm not sure if you remember or not. The number of guys with crew cuts, khaki duffel bags that you see at the Manila airport on the United, coming in and leaving at the United gates, is striking, okay? And they're all 25 to 35, you know, not overly, you know, buffed or, but yeah, so we're there. We don't have Subic, but what we also have are a couple of other bases, just suspiciously one right in the very northern tip of the Philippines, which is probably 300 miles from Taiwan, by the way.
Well, wasn't Subic Bay had,
we're there,
they have massive,
we're there a lot.
They had massive ship repair facilities and dry docks and stuff. We just left all that. Nobody's there.
Not destroyed. It was, it was almost. It was not. It would have taken billions upon billions to fix that, because my understanding is the ash was so thick.
Okay, so it got kind of wrecked, right?
You know, it was destroyed by Mount Pinatubo.
Did we have ships there when that happened, or we?
No, we. We put them all out to sea.
Right.
I've not heard of any ships being damaged by it, but no, it was. And the thought problem with that ash is once it settles, it can get extremely hard.
Plus, it's very, is it acidic or something? There's something wrong. I mean, I'm not sure they're all the same, but yeah. Anyway, so what are you thinking market wise? We were down heavy this morning. Now we're coming right back. We're only down 13. We're only down 27. We were down a lot more. We're down 50 last night in the spoos. Where's this going, guys? I mean, I'm looking at the Federal Reserve balance sheet. For a while, it was going down. Now it's heading back up, which means that the Fed's buying stuff. They went up $19 billion last week that they put back in the market on the balance sheet. What are we gonna do? What is our story with our debt? I mean, what are we gonna do? I mean, this is not. And if we get to the point where Japan and UK and stuff aren't poning up here for these auctions, you know, there's a problem here. The question is, what is it? What is the solution? And, you know, I think we need to recognize the problem, and right now we're not even recognizing the problem. You know, we're talking about this new Fed charge is going to come in and lower interest rates. Who? To who? You're going to lower them and people are still going to buy our stuff at lower interest when our risk is getting higher? Where do you guys see this? I know you're not in this like I am, but Mr. Flanagan, the answer to debt is can't constantly be more debt. But
I think that's the option they've chosen. That really is the only one, it seems. You gotta just keep borrowing. You're hoping people show up to the auction town. That's been, you know, held as a, you know, a kind of a what-if situation for a long time. But it was the Japanese or whatever whose money we depended on. And if they just stop showing up to the you know, auction, we got trouble. And, you know, when that happens, there will be trouble. But in the meantime, I don't know how. I don't see anybody with a plan B. There's no way to replace that quickly except just printing more money.
Well, the history of all this, and I obviously think I know some of this stuff, but I listened to somebody on YouTube, this very articulate lady, and she's talking about and I guess if we all thought about it, this has been the deal for 30 years, 40 years. The U.S. essentially spends ahead of themselves. They're a great customer. The dollars sound, and people, the blowback is you turn around and you lend the U.S. money, and they turn around and buy stuff from you, basically. And it has worked for like a long time, and people were sort of comfortable with it. Well, now we have a change in my, you know, and I'm not against, by the way, it may sound like it, but I'm not against everything Trump has done in terms of rattling cages of people. I mean, a lot of it, I think some of it, maybe not a lot of it, some of it had to happen. But his inability to look forward and see, okay, if I rattle this, what happens down the line? I mean, there's a reason why, you know, he didn't do so hot in grad school or even went to grad school. Because he was never forced to say, okay, if I do this, what are the 10 things I can expect to happen? I don't think him or the people around him care. Or it's too self-centered or whatever it is. But when you do these kinds of things, if we screw up oil for a while, okay, some people here, maybe donors, are going to make money. But okay, what does it do to Japan? Japan's in as bad a shape as we are money-wise. What does it do to the UK? Well, screw the UK. They could be doing more out of the North Sea, but they've gotten green and, you know, screw them. Okay, well, that's fine. Except they owe us, we owe them $900 billion or some number. That's kind of a lot. I don't see a sense of if we cut off this system, and okay, we're not just going to keep buying from people because that's wrong. We're going to put tariffs on it. Okay, if we do that and we kind of screw the other guy, well, if the other guy happens to be buying our stuff, well, has anybody thought of that? I mean, I don't know all these answers, guys, but I don't see anybody else even come up with the questions. Do you? I mean, if we put a huge tariff on UK because we don't like.
Oh no, people have been saying, have been talking about this, but no one's been listening.
I don't know if people are putting the two and two. If we have a trade balance, UK, and they're, let's say they're screwing us on the trade balance, okay. But and does anybody? When's the last time anybody? And I'll ask both of you guys because you're kind of on different ends of the political spectrum. When has anybody talked about a current account deficit? Does anybody even know what that is? You guys do, I think.
Well, I mean, it has certainly not been in public discourse for the last. For what? The last 6 to 8 years? Yeah. I mean, maybe that's too long, but the last 6 years at least. I don't remember people talking about the deficit.
Well, no, I'm talking about
traditionally people on the conservative side, God bless them. But no, the deficit, I mean, what do we're spending $6 to $7 trillion and we're taking in $5, right?
Well, that's okay, the last. So I was talking about the trade deficit versus the current account deficit.
Okay.
Does anybody even know what that means?
I mean,
Mr. Flam, if for instance, there's two countries in the world, okay, say it's just us in the UK, and we import more from them than they do from us, which means they have American dollars, all right? But if it's a floating exchange rate, the rate floats. So somewhere along the line, those things got to come back here because the same amount have to be bought of the British pound than is sold, right? So if we decide to, if Ford sells more cars in Britain, there's a trade deficit, But the people over there turn around and invest in Ford and send the money this way and buy Ford stock. The current account, the amount of dollars going one way versus the pound coming the other way, always have to match. Correct? So, if you zero in on just the trade deficit, which is all Trump has talked about his whole friggin' life, and how we're screwing the other guys in the trade deficit, you're missing the part about how the money's coming back here and buying U.S. Treasuries. If you screw up with one, you're going to screw up the other, correct? I don't think these guys either understand that or care about it. But there's a reason for that, right? If we say, okay, we're not going to buy any more from you guys, okay, then I don't have any money. If we weren't broke, I guess it wouldn't matter, but we are. We need the money coming back the other way to keep it going. Why don't people realize this? I think you guys do, don't you? I mean, did I explain it right?
Well, yeah, but I mean, the number of countries we run trade deficits with, and they're not all investing like the countries you're talking about either. At some point, you know, it's a mixed message at best.
Well, no, you're complicating it. I said if there was only two countries.
Right. Now, if there's, and there's not.
But okay, but say there were three countries, and we had a huge trade deficit with France, and they got all these dollars. So they bought a whole bunch of stuff from the U.K. And the U.K. turned around and bought U.S. bonds. Well, now it's just a circle. Comes right back there. It's just, why does it have to come back from France? Once it's on the float, if we buy cocoa from Cocoa Island, and all of a sudden we don't, that's all we buy from these guys because we don't have any cocoa. If we buy cocoa from Cocoa Island, we buy $100,000 worth of cocoa. All right, these guys got $100,000 worth of dollars. What are they going to do with it? They're going to turn around and buy God knows what from France. They're going to buy wine. All right, so they buy wine from France. Now France has $100,000. They turn around and buy U.S. Treasuries. Do we really need to get it back from cocoa? As long it has to come back here, or the thing won't balance, right?
Well, we'd like to get whatever we can, and God knows we need it.
Well, but I'm saying it has to come back here, or else what are they going to do? Just put it in a hole over there and then never do anything with it? What good does that do them? I mean, the education on this is sort of like Johnson's talk about why do we think the Americans can only handle 10% of the story? Just because you have a trade deficit with somebody doesn't mean they're screwing you.
No, I certainly agree with that. No, are you talking? Well, no, I don't think there's any doubt that. Of course, we put tariffs on people that we have trade surpluses with,
yeah,
as well. Let's not forget that.
Well, we put a tariff on Liechtenstein.
And we put a tariff on Brazil.
Now, John, I know you had a tooth issue last week.
Last week?
You might be the only person who knows what we import from Liechtenstein. False teeth.
How all right, gentlemen, I'm going to take off here.
All right, John, take care of yourself.
All right.
Take care, John.
Take care. Hey, take care, John.
John, Mr. Flanagan, I get the feeling that we're... I hope there's a solution, and I hope this group has it. I think that some stuff is... We got a few pots here that are all boiling at once. And maybe there's a way to tie it all together. It seems to me that there's a problem. You got the market pretty darn high. You got interest rates going up. It seems to me the only stool we have left is the market. It's regular people's 401k or IRAs, all the stuff people have here at PTI. I mean, I'm trying my best that if something goes the other way, my guys aren't hurt that bad. But I think there's a very small percentage of people that are even thinking that way. If it goes down, it's a buy. If interest rates go to 8%, which I hope they don't, it's a buy. I don't know. There's something here. I'm smelling a rat, and I don't. And you're supposed to be talking me out of it. You're not doing a very good job.
Oh well, no. And I'm the thing that concerns me most right now, Tom, is not China. It's not Russia, not Ukraine, it's the UK, because I see this situation now as, you know, ominous, unless they, you know, figure out some solution pretty fast, because they've got an enraged, you know, rank and file population about what they're doing, and they're completely dismissive of you know, what's out, you know, I think apparent to anybody who watches TV or listens to the, you know, news or anything else. It's become a flashpoint for all of the, you know, the DEI stuff, the climate stuff, all the things that you know, are in ferment, you know, or in retreat, but you know, they're front and center and pushing full steam ahead in UK, and I'm just, you know, it's not going down well. And you know, they're unraveling Brexit. You know, this is what the two Labour people waiting in the wings of Starmer were finally to bow out. It's going to be a return to the EU. This is going to really infuriate.
That's certainly not the solution.
Well, of course not. But this is what's going to happen, I think. And it's going to take an even bigger toll on, you know, the attitude of the population. I couldn't believe the clips I saw over the weekend. The march, you know, the protests in London.
Well, I think two things. I think the press over there is a hell of a lot more independent. So if people are pissed off, it rises to the top a lot quicker than it does here.
Yeah, but not the BBC. I mean, but I think, you know,
there's a lot more independent.
They're more. I mean, you can see it even in the conduct of their parliamentary debates and everything else. It's much more freewheeling. I wouldn't say it's any less controlled or duplicitous than anywhere else. It gives a good picture of how angry people are, but I think, you know, you got Obama mentoring Starmer. I mean, you couldn't find a closer clone to Obama than Keir Starmer. Not even in this country, and he's over there coaching them, you know, how to make himself more authentic. Here you got the least authentic president telling the least authentic, you know, prime minister.
I don't think he's the least authentic. It may not be very authentic, but we got to dash the break here. But you know, Jen, it's how the thing that I love doing about the show is it's sort of the same subject. I mean, Johnson deflecting the idea of how bad the insider trading is by saying people need to make more money is a very interesting speech.
He's absolutely right, though, Tom. That's the thing. You and this is how you can throw enough of a fog around an issue that's become so problematic that people don't even want to mention it.
But I'm saying the same sort of thing is, out of all Britain's problems, it's very similar to Stocks and Jacks, of firing your manager and hiring a new one. All it really does is buy you time with the fandom. It doesn't help anything, right? It's not like the first guy's an idiot, the second guy's better. I mean, it could work out that way, but generally not. Now, what does Brexit have to do with Britain's problems other than give the new guys two more years of essentially wait and see? It deflects everything from the real problems, right?
Well, I think, you know, what's happened is it was never really, you know, a Brexit like the one that people thought they were voting for in 2016. The creep that, you know, had people been seeing that made them turn against the EU has continued, you know, since the Brexit vote, so that, you know, the immigration is more out of control than ever. The lack of, you know, policing, the decline of the cities, just the crazy, you know, offbeat stuff that, you know, they're pushing, you know, the Democrats are trying to do here too. It's nutty, and I think, you know, the problem really is that because they never got the Brexit that they expected to, they didn't get any version out of it.
Well, they got themselves out of the idiots in Brussels that they're not telling you how to make your teapots anymore.
Well, I don't think they really did, though. I mean, it's they've still healed to the Brussels message.
And well, those guys,
it was labor pumping it harder than ever.
I had one of those guys on the show. He's my worst guest ever. He was from Finland.
Doesn't surprise me.
SP futures down 12, NASDAQ futures down 35. We're going to a quick break. We come back. We'll have Nancy, and she can fight with John instead of me. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now, right now.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Hello, North Bank Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom. I'm Matt Byrne on the board. S&P futures down 3. NASDAQ futures now up 27. Another buy the dipper. So, Mr. Flanagan, why didn't Matt Byrne have us have press passes to the Sox Cubs game yesterday? You would think any kind of producer we'd have press passes.
Oh, they got lost in the mail.
Yes, what mail would that be? What, in Nairobi or someplace?
Something like that.
Anyway, over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 190.7%. Markets here are kind of mixed, but they're actually kind of up. FTSE up 43.4. CAC around down 29.4. I'm going to say they're up, not mixed. We're in Asia. Nikkei down 593. That's a full 1%. Hang Seng down 27. 1.1%. Mainland China, Shanghai is only down 3, so call that one flat. Asia-Pacific stocks mostly fall as Trump's Iran warning stokes fresh oil supply fears. Okay, so you always got to be a reason on this stuff. Friday, after a big week last week, Friday was not a big week. S&P futures were down. Friday was not a big day. Down 92. NASDAQ was down 410. That's a full 1.5%. So we hopefully will bounce today, but we will see. Bonds unchanged at 4.59 on the 30-year or 10-year. That's been that way for a while. Japan, 2.75. Oil down 36 cents, but still 105.06. RBOB up a penny, 371. So when you're paying 450 to 5 something, wherever the hell you are, getting the taxes, don't be surprised. Gold got whacked on Friday. It's down another 370 today, 45.58. Silver down 30 cents, 77.24. Foreign exchange, dollars dipped. The euro's 116. It was over 117, so the dollar is actually a little stronger than it was midweek. British pound, 133.9. It was 135. So we're getting these back and forth 1% moves in the dollar, which again is, if you're doing a lot of stuff overseas or you're buying oil, is a big deal. Bitcoin down 808, 77,043, so back pretty far under 80,000 number. Matt, quick traffic, weather, sports, and then we'll get Nancy.
Yeah, real quick, it is currently 7:37 a.m. on May 18th, 2026. Weather for Chicago right now, 75 degrees at O'Hare and Midway. Overcast this morning with a high of 82. Today, likely showers in the area. Tonight, low of 68 with a chance of thunderstorms. Slight chance of showers tomorrow, later in the day. Now over to sports, NBA playoffs. Yesterday, we saw Cavaliers beat Pistons 125-94 in Game 7 of the East semifinals. Tonight, Spurs play Thunder in the first game of the West Finals. And, of course, yesterday for Chicago's MLB teams, Cubs lost to White Sox in a close game, 8-9. Cubs are 29 wins to 18 losses this season. Meanwhile, White Sox are 24 wins to 22 losses this season. Cubs back again tonight with the Brewers and White Sox against Mariners. So I got Chief, back to you.
One thing's for sure, the Cubs might lead the league in men left on the bases. I'm not so sure that's a stat you want. Nance, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing okay. Interest rates up, housing prices up. How long can they both do that?
You know what? I don't know. I think it's very interesting that I told somebody, they said rates are going to go down when we get the new Fed chair, and I said, oh, I don't think so. I don't think that can really happen. Because we broke the, you know, the bonds went up. The 10-year bond really went up last week.
Yep. Why? We're quizzing the population here. Why after all these years do people still think that the Fed controls long-term rates over the long term? I don't know how people still think that, but they sure as hell do, don't they?
They do. Oh God, they do. They said, "Oh well, they got a text that said something like, ding dong, the Wicked Witch's daddy leaves today."
Yeah.
I started laughing, like, really? I don't think this, did you look at the 10-year? And it's just amazing, but, you know, I think the market already builds in before any announcements are made anyway, so the market has built in whatever it thinks of that move. I mean, everybody knew it was coming. It's not like, poof, he's gone and now we've got someone else new. It already knows what the new guy's going to do, so it's already built into the rates anyways. And they're just going up.
Well, if you start, I don't think they're getting away with pouring more money in the system to lower the short-term rates and having the long-term rates go down with it. You know, granted, this was, a lot of this had to do with COVID, so I'll take the bottom tick. You know what the bottom tick was on the 10-year?
No.
0.069.
Oh, you're kidding.
An 8/3/2020. But let's kind of get rid of that one. Let's say it was 1% on 8/2/2021, 1.3%. So if you went from 1.3% to 4.6 almost, you would think, if you were a first grade accounting student, you would say, well, gee, housing prices must have gone down. They've gone up.
Yeah. I've never seen it go the way it's going. I haven't seen this be too much before. So I don't know.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to be it doesn't seem to be helping commercial property, does it, John?
In no.
Oh. Sorry, John.
Oh no.
Well, it's some of the stuff, one of our listeners and a friend, they build apartment buildings and so forth, multifamily. And there's been all kinds of stuff that has happened that you don't even... Now if they build a place, say you build an apartment with a 3, 4, or 5-story apartment, if you can get the zoning in, say, Irving Park Road, someplace in a community, nice condos or nice apartments they're building, you can't even rent the downstairs anymore for commercial. You know, you don't have the coffee shops. You know, that rental stuff is awful. It's to the point where they're trying to put apartments on the first floor. I mean, there's a lot of little society changes that are changing in this commercial area, wouldn't you say, John and Nance?
Yeah. But go ahead, Nancy, sir.
No, I don't live on the north side, but, you know, I've never seen the mixed-use buildings like that do super well since it started. So, John, you can go. I don't know what it's like.
Well, the sad thing is that it's the model that was used, you know, going way back, you know, in the 19th century or before, where you had commercial space, you know, it's accessible to the street, and then you had housing behind it or above it, and some people, you know, lived and worked in the same building. They had a shop, and, you know, they boarded upstairs or whatever, and that was always a good model because it was an efficient use of space. And then you put the automobile into the mixture, and, you know, you had to allow for parking to get people to come to you because they didn't just walk there anymore. A lot of them don't take the bus anymore. But that's the model that was used. You know, it's still being used in these buildings that are supposed to be carrying, you know, some of the cost by having commercial space on the first floor. And they're all over the, you know, where I live here and elsewhere, and there isn't a single one that I can see built in the last 20 years that's ever had tenants on the first floor, commercial tenants. So it's just to me like a monument to, you know, a plan that has long outlived its usefulness, and people are still thinking that these businesses are going to come someday, and they're not.
Well, it's in the downtown buildings, it became if you had a nice building for offices, the people there needed, you know, maybe a barber shop, maybe a cleaners, maybe certainly a 7-Eleven kind of place. You probably needed a bar and a restaurant, and, you know, if it's 5 below 0, you don't want to go out. You have to go out of the building for lunch or breakfast. It all kind of dovetailed together, and you lose one, you seems like you lose all of it, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
State Street is just, you know, pathetic. I mean,
well, I think some of the stuff the city, I know we're boring your second answer, we'll get back to you, but in this 175, because we were there for a long time, right? And long before that, we, our bar was in there, but 175, it's one of the few buildings that has an address on two streets. But it's 175 West Jackson, it's 141 West Van Buren. The thing is a full square block. It's the third biggest square foot city building in the city after the Merchandise Mart and the Sears Tower, the Willis Tower, or whatever it is. And they had all these places on the downstairs floor, but the city sort of, I knew the guy who ran the place or managed it. There was a huge CBS in there, and they used to get, their rent was, what would you say it was? Yeah, it wasn't even a, was it 10% of the base? Because the, like I said, the thing's a square block. It was a big CVS, but still it was a small piece of the building. Their rent was $17.5 a month. And they were pretty happy with that. The place is always packed. And they had a little aisle where you go over there and buy, you know, a sandwich, or you buy cheese if you forgot it, and crackers. I mean, they had a little bit of a, what do you want to call that? You could buy food over there. And the, but the pharmacy was always mopped. And anyway, but what's the lease, you guys, that your lease automatically goes up with the taxes and all the other stuff? What do they call that?
The gross lease?
Yeah, well, at a period of, they were there for like, say, 10, 12 years. All of a sudden, that part of the lease with the taxes and the water bill and all that other kind of crap was more than their rent. And they said, look, you can't do it to us both ways. I mean, if you, our lease is coming up, you got to lower the lease down to like 14 because all this other stuff we can't pay. The building said no, and they were gone in a week. They cleaned the whole place out. Now, I got to believe that a lot of people in the building liked the fact that the pharmacy was there. You don't know, there was about the bar that I used to go in was long gone, but a place called Plug Mahone's. It was in a building. Plug Mahone's closed. Within the next 6 months, the building lost like 25% of their people. Now, they might have, the leases were probably just coming up or whatever, but they're going, hey, there's no drugstore, there's no restaurant bar. What are we staying here for? I'm not going to give this place another 10 years. It all sort of works together. But when is this? I see a lot of strip malls with nothing but space, too, out by you, Nance. Where, we have the housing prices, no matter what, every place Audrey goes, there's a bidding war. Is that just cash to cash, people trading places? What's the health of the person that now the houses are up? What, this year, they just said, what was the report yesterday from the, in the last 10 years, housing prices are up like 35%, and inflation is only up like 18 or something in the last 10 years?
I'm amazed at the upbidding. I mean, I think the bid they put in yesterday, they went $50,000 over the asking price.
Oh, you were a part of that? I was just...
No, I think that's what happened. And then I just did one. I just worked with Audrey on one where we were as much as, I want to say maybe 50 to 70 over, and the person didn't even get it.
Is this?
It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy.
What, are the real estate people from out of the area don't know what the places are worth, or what? How could somebody screw up that bad?
I don't know. On the one I was a part of, I thought it was just a kind of a one-off where it's, you know, it is turkey for the most part. It really was turkey. It was, you're seeing some of these places for sale that are so much work, and the people just can't put the deposit down and then have money left for, you know, remodeling right away. And what's out there is in such bad shape. That, so when you run into something that's turnkey, you're saying, well, God, I'd have to put, you know, 60 or 70 into the other place. And this is just as good for the same money, right? So you just go over and think you're going to get it. But it's amazing. But then you have to worry if the person needs to take a mortgage, is it going to appraise out, right? Because they go by a number of square footage and, you know, those kinds of things. It just turns into a nightmare. I don't know what the place sold for. Like in the one I was involved in, we don't know. It hasn't closed yet. So I thought it was just kind of like an anomaly. And then I talked to Audrey last night, and I said, what happened today? Because I'm not involved in that one. She said they put the bid in at 50,000 over. And the people selling the place said that's a really nice offer, but they're still going to wait to see all the other offers they get from it. So they didn't even take it.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing to me what's going on. And then with the interest rates this high, in the situation where I had the deal, the man showed up yesterday at my house and said, well, what is my interest rate? So, and I said, it's going to be in, you know, 6.5 to 6.75 when this dust settles. And he goes, I'm at 2.5. It's just, yeah, like,
well, you were at 2.5.
Conversation on 4 other deals you bid on and didn't get.
By the way, the missive is the tax lease, all that kind of stuff is called common area maintenance for buildings like that. I don't what happens if a place is, the people that bought the place, who knows, I'll pick a number, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, they paid 2.25 for it, say 20 years ago. Now somebody puts the bid in and all of a sudden it trades at 450 tomorrow. When does that tax get adjusted? Not when the next assessment comes by, or by your the price you paid for it?
It goes by the price you paid.
I mean, when does the if last year's taxes is, you know, $5,000 and you just paid, you know, $450 for a place, when does that $5,000 go up? When the whole area gets assessed, or right away for you?
The whole area gets assessed. Okay.
So it's not going to go up just because you paid up for the place.
No, but it is going to go up, and it's another piece to the puzzle you need to talk about. But in the person I had yesterday, they want to move back to Illinois, and it's just very difficult once you leave the Chicago housing market, and I'm talking about, you know, the collar counties, everything, okay? Once you leave that, it's very hard to get back into it because we're starting to get just too expensive to get back in it, just like if you left California, you know what I mean? If you leave California, you're kind of like king when they go over to Phoenix area, right? And they buy in. But if you leave Phoenix and try and go back into California, you're going to have sticker shock because you're not going to get the value that you did when you were in California.
It's kind of an interesting web we're weaving here, and I don't know what, again, it's all sort of the same subject we're talking about. I mean, these price, I mean, the person who, you know, I don't, in terms of benefited by the governmental largesse and sort of money, I mean, if you bought a house, you know, whatever, for $150,000 25 years ago, you're selling it for what, man? It's $450, probably. I mean, hell, bungalows in Mount Greenwood are going for, what, $375 or something or more?
No, they're going for more, but the problem with the thing that the coincidence that keeps or the factor that keeps Mount Greenwood at the pace it's going is because the Chicago police and fire and school teachers have nowhere else to go. That's as far south as you can go. That's it.
Well, either there, so, or what's the place up north? What's the place up north, way out on the northwest side?
Edison Park is the same. Yeah.
It's the extreme limit
of the city, yeah.
Yeah, because my nephew lives in on the Mount Greenwood up on the north side. I think they call it Edgewater.
Edgewater's on the lake. Edison Park is the one right way out by O'Hare.
And Edgebrook, too, at near Sauconash. There's a lot of city employees that live there because it's, you know, it's a really nice neighborhood, and it's, you know, there's good transportation, expressways and stuff.
It's like 6300 North, isn't it, John?
Yeah, like, yeah, okay. Devon and Central.
Yes, so that's about where he is, okay? And he's on the very edge of it. And the homes are holding the same crazy value.
Yeah.
And it's because, and they paid more than, I believe, they paid more than $500 for it. Well, I mean, much more. And it's an average home like it would be in Mount Greenwood. I mean, to me, it's amazing. But they're holding because they have to stay within the city limits and they can't get out of that. So those are more an anomaly, but out in the suburbs, I just don't see what people are paying. I don't understand it. I just don't get it.
Well, it certainly doesn't match the... we listened earlier to Speaker of the House talking about how... essentially whining about how the people... What do you say, John? In the last however many years, the prices are up 46%, and people in Congress are only up 31%. I'm going to say I don't agree with that. I mean, I don't like to see that. I like to see everybody at least maintain. What does he think the rest of the world's doing?
Oh, God. It's...
Does he even care or no?
It's even more outrageous, you know, the gap. Yeah.
So. It's funny. People are even starting to admit it. I mean, the other day, I heard something about since 2020, housing prices are up. Or no, the last 10 years, housing prices are up X percent, and people's wages are only up something. I mean, there needs to be, but you would think there's going to be a reckoning here someplace. I mean, I not to delve back into politics, but in my kind of world, which is never going to see it. Trump and Z should have sat down and said, "Hey guys, you're broke, we're broke. How can we help each other?" Instead of postulating about every other goddamn thing they're talking about. I mean, isn't that really the problem both of them have?
Well, and that's kind of, I think, how they pitched it when they, you know, returned to their, you know, countries afterwards. It really is about we accomplished this, we accomplished that. Everything was fine. All it was we showed how we really need each other. In a very desperate way, and we survived this, and we all came out looking just, you know, fine. You know, we're going to both be positive about it, but it's because they're both so interdependent. It really is like a codependency.
What do you think happened? I'm sorry, Nance. What do you think happened with rumors? Are nobody really knows. I mean, Russell, who's been there and does research and all this stuff, he has trouble trying to figure out who exactly is owed most by China officially and by the dollar-denominated debt individually. And the rumor from, you know, actually Russell talked about it last Wednesday, you know, did BlackRock go over there wondering if they can get any of their money back?
Yeah.
Do you think they got any? Was that even part of the conversation?
We won't know, you know, maybe never, but yeah, that's, you know, there's a reason all those people were there, you know.
Is that normal to have all those entourage there?
No.
A little bit, John. There's always been guys. There were guys that went on a ping pong diplomacy, didn't they? I mean, there's always been a few people that go.
Yeah, but he had didn't he have, like, I don't know how many people he had with him that from all these companies there.
Like 18 people.
Well, there was a second plane.
Yeah. They didn't all travel together.
No, they picked up the one guy in Alaska, right? Guy from NVIDIA. And a refueling stopped, and they pick him up. Was he on the main plane or the other plane? I bet he was on the main plane.
I can't recall a show of financial force like that in a diplomatic mission like this was. No.
So it's not normal, then?
No. I'm going to say that to this scale, maybe not, but I think if you went back, I can't believe I'm taking... decided John's guy here. I think if you went back to the last 15 trips like that, you'd find some people on there. Whoever.
Oh, yeah.
Whether it's oil guys or something.
Well, what was the idea behind that?
I know that's the reason why I kind of know a little bit about this is when Nixon went, like, the second time over to China, my mother's cousin was on. He went with. Now, I don't know if he's on the same plane, but they had a bunch of American people, industrialists, went. Now, whether they were there in the meetings and everything, I don't think so. But it was more than just the president and his group. There's some people. Like, matter of fact, he was a mining engineer. The Chinese wanted to buy. You'd love this guy, Nance. Big tough Italian guy. They go, "We'll buy one of every one of your machines." And he goes, "The hell you will! I'm going back to the airport." He left. You know, just what they're going to do with the machines. They're going to copy them.
They wanted to buy one.
Yeah, when was this, Jen? 1970 something?
72, 73.
Yeah, he goes, "No, you're not." He got up and left. Or he went back and hit out by the plane until they all left or something. He goes, "No, you're not doing that. What do you think? I'm that dumb?"
Wow.
Well, I think this was, you know, Trump wanted to do this to show that he had the, you know, the cachet or the persuasiveness to get all these people together to come there as a group and Xi could turn around and say, well, these people wouldn't have shown up for just anybody. They're here because of me. And they can both, and they're both right, really.
Yeah.
This is how they can both play it. So it was important for both of them to have all these players there because it boosted Xi among his, you know, cohorts who, you know, are probably trying to get him out at the first opportunity. And they might think twice knowing the kind of backing that, you know, showed up for him. So, you know, I think this was all about stabilizing a really unstable situation.
What kind of, I mean, I have no idea what happens when they actually boot a guy out over there. I mean, it's got to be, you know, boy, do they see it coming? Who are the other guys? We don't seem to see any whiff of that here, do we, other than the fact that they got money problems?
Yeah, I mean, and it's only, you know, who hasn't shown up in 6 months or who vanished mysteriously and is rumored to be dead or executed.
Vanished mysteriously.
Well, what happened to Nancy's favorite guy, Jack Ma? Is he around?
Oh, yeah, he's resurfaced, I think, isn't he?
I don't know. I haven't seen him, but he was all over the place.
I mean, it's been years, but I think he has resurfaced.
Where was he in the you know?
Well, he can't say, you know.
God. So, Nance, how much more can we see these rates go up, assuming they do go up? And maybe they won't. Maybe they'll come back down. How much more can they go before the straw is getting near to whacking the camel in the back here?
I have no idea. I just don't know. If I did, I'd go to Vegas, one roll the dice. I could retire. Or I'd have to work forever. I mean, which way it's going to go, I don't know.
All you had to do, why didn't you just have the trifecta in the Derby? Would it pay 19 grand?
For what, a $2 ticket?
Three. Trifecta is three, I think.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah. Well, why, there was what? It was a 70-1 shot in there? There was a 25 guy. Who would have picked? The only people that have picked that are people that just play their own numbers every day.
Yeah. Nice work if you can get it.
Did you?
Well, you know what? Wasn't that horse was the very back of the race, wasn't it?
He was in last place. He was like he was in a different race.
I remember somebody laughing and they said, "Look at that horse! He's like, you know, way back there. What's he even doing in the race?" And then I said, "Wait a minute! Isn't that the horse that won?"
Yeah, and he just kept coming and coming and coming. The guys in front of him kept jostling each other and so forth, and you know, and he didn't get jostled. He didn't fight anybody, and all of a sudden he just ran up. Kind of, nobody was looking. I mean, pretty scary stuff. I mean, that's one of these days. You know, it'd take a guy like Flanagan to get a box down there. I'm only going to the Derby if I get a box. I'm not. We're too old for the infield.
I'm not doing the hoi polloi routine.
No.
I'm just looking for tickets for the Cubs game. Hey, what about? Did you see the horse that did the backward cart flip and flipped the jockey off?
Oh, the Derby. Yeah. Yeah.
Did that horse live?
Yeah. Okay. I think he was kind of limping going over. I don't think they had to destroy him. He walked off.
Well, I just have never seen anything like that before.
I think those jockeys hit the ground more than you think. My stepfather.
The horse?
Well, my stepfather.
The horse also, I mean,
yeah. Well,
flipped and then hit the ground.
You know, these horses are only 3-year-olds. All of a sudden, you bring them out in front of 100,000 people or whatever it is, and you shove them in the. I mean, it's not like they're really, really young. What is Audrey, the horse girl? She says if they're 3 years old, you're barely riding them. They're already racing. You would think they could do this when they're 4 or 5, but they don't. Anyway, so whose job is it to get us in the Derby next year, Giants? Boy, he's failed miserably every one of these years. We can't even get press passes at a Sox game, for God's sake.
You can't even get us all out for a dinner.
Wait a minute, you guys both bailed.
Start with that, yeah.
You guys both bailed on that one. Of course, I'll tell you what is going on here? Which Chicago, we better fix this place. Right now, the expressways, you can't even go on it. It took me forever to get home last night from the south side with this. Were these people playing at Soldier Field?
Bruno Mars.
The Sox game, the Sox Cup game was full. They let out, and as soon as that traffic sort of cleared, the Bruno Mars people were all over the expressways. It was brutal.
Richie might have been one of them.
And of course, we have no public transportation in any of these places.
Well, John had Skybox tickets to go, so we just had to get on the road.
Yeah, you guys got to go.
Helicopter in and out of there.
But yeah, you might as well get the helicopter in and out of there. Didn't I remember when Oprah used to fly home to Michigan every night in a helicopter?
Yeah. And the owner of the Tribune, Colonel McCormick, you know, he used to live out in Winfield or Wheaton out that way. He'd fly in every day in a private plane. He didn't pilot the plane, I don't think, but he'd land at Meigs Field and go to the Tribune Tower for his day job.
We see somebody torch the track last night, the one down south. It has been open for 10 years, the harness track down there. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, Balmoral?
Yeah, Balmoral. So we torched it last. Well, let's put it this way. There was a fire last night.
Really?
Oh, yeah. A fire in an abandoned building. How do you think that happened?
Out in Crete, right?
Yeah. Actually, I think, is it in Crete or actually is it in Balmoral? I don't know. It's might whatever. It's near Crete.
It was in Crete. They just called it Balmoral, and I have no idea why.
I don't know why, because the golf course is Balmoral, too.
After the royal family.
Oh, God.
Had nothing to do with Crete.
Well, guys, Nancy, give everybody a shameless plug. Get a mortgage while you can from Nancy. How do they find you?
It's 708-341-9601.
All right, Nancy, good stuff. John, we're beating up on everybody today. That's okay. you know what? Everybody deserves it here. I mean, I don't see anybody with a solution, do you?
Nope.
No, so when are you going to get us out for dinner, Tom?
Well, you guys dodged the thing last Friday.
What thing? Oh, you told us the same week. I mean, come on. What kind of planning is that?
Oh, God. Well, I think we probably got to do it down south. You know what? We got Memorial Day weekend coming up. We could do something this weekend.
That's a week from today. No show week from today.
Yeah, no show a week from today. So, anyway, we'll be back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks. We're way up here. S&P futures up 144. So we're up, 350 points since we walked in. So that's a good number. And S&P is up 12. We were down like 50 this morning. So we've got a bounce going here like we kind of normally do after a horrible day on Friday. We'll see if it holds. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.
Suppose you run your business and let me run mine.